Hey, this is Marky Mark from Soul Wizard Podcast, and you are listening to the Nerd Podcast Mafia. Entertainment your ears can't refuse.
Welcome to the continued podcast adventures of Superhero Speak.
But I think many of the people that love this character and that love superheroes in general have used these stories as inspiration to say, you know what? I'm going to do something good in the world. I'm going to make a difference like my hero when I was a kid.
That is my fondest memory of it, because when you're doing comic books, you want them to affect people.
Right.
You want people to care. You want to strike emotions. And I knew that Clone Saga was striking a lot of emotions.
Can you imagine Pulp Fiction starring Goofy and Mickey Mouse?
I can totally imagine that.
I'm sure somebody's written that one too.
Quarter pounder with cheese in France, Mickey? What? Boy, ale with cheese, Mickey. Yeah. I can totally
see.
I would watch the hell out of that movie.
Yes, I gladly sacrifice up my progeny to you, almighty Marvel beast.
But Neil Adams is somewhere going, it's my time.
How do you measure success?
Hey, everyone. You're listening to Superhero Speak, and I'm your host, Dave.
And John.
And it appears that JD is off this week. We don't know yet. We'll see if he joins us later. But in his place, we have a very competent co-host. He is not only the co-host of our fellow Nerd Podcast Mafia podcast, Dinner and a Podcast, he's also a high school science teacher.
I am.
So everyone, welcome Steve to the show. How you doing?
How you doing, guys? Thanks for having me on. Really appreciate it. Love the show.
Oh. Yeah. Yes, keep giving us false compliments. It makes us happy.
Listen all the time. Love the show. Love the interviews. Really love the interviews. That's my favorite part.
We'll give the compliments right back. No problem.
Yeah, no, I mean, I love your guys' show, too. I actually wanted to, you know, since we'll give you the opportunity here to plug it, I'm always curious how people get started. Like, you guys seem like you've been friends for a long time, and how'd the concept come about?
Well, my two co-hosts, Mike and Joe, I met Joe in college. Really funny story about Joe in college. I thought he was asking me out on a date. Pretty funny story. I'm straight, so that was pretty awkward for me thinking that he was asking me out on a date. But we met in college in like a speech class, and he introduced me to my wife. This was back in 2002, 2003, and we just stayed friends ever since. He's the godfather to my daughter, and he grew up with Mike. He went to high school with Mike, the other co-host. So just by me hanging out with Joe, I started hanging out with Mike by association, mm-hmm. and then we became really good friends. And we all seem to kind of like the same thing. We all like nerdy stuff. We all like sci-fi, and we all like Kevin Smith, which was a big influence on us. And we would, as we got older, we didn't get to hang out as much anymore. So we would, you know, our big night out was like going to see the big Marvel movie that was released, or the big action movie that was released mm-hmm. in the summertime or whatever. And we always found ourselves in a diner afterwards, you know, discussing the movie or critiquing the movie. And we were like, you know what, we should be recording this. Like, some of this stuff is really funny to us anyway, or to our friends. We thought we'd at least have 20 listeners. With our friends that would want to hear us. So we went out and we bought a little tabletop microphone, and we plopped it right there in the middle of the diner table. And we said, we'll call it Dinner and a Podcast. Kind of like the name came about from that show. I don't know if you've ever seen Comedians and Coffee, the Jerry Seinfeld show.
Yes, yes.
That's where the name kind of came out of. You know, I mean, I do a podcast at my school. Like you said, I teach at a high school, and I started a podcasting club there. That was my first experience with doing a podcast. Mm-hmm. And then once I started doing that, Joe and Michael were like, dude, we got to do a podcast. We've been talking about it for so long. You know how to do it now. You know how to set up iTunes and everything. So, you know, now it's our chance to do it. And, you know, the first couple were rough. You know, if you go back and listen to the first, you know, 10, 15, 20 of them, we didn't have the sound down pat yet. We didn't have, because we're doing it in a diner, eating food with other people around us, and it's really loud. There have been multiple times where we went to the diner, recorded an hour and a half episode, and then had to scrap the whole thing because when I went to go edit it, it was just a mess. It was just all you heard was clanking of plates and stuff. And now pretty much we go to the same three diners. We rotate them every week. And we've gotten really friendly with the maitre d's, and they kind of just put us in the corner where no one is. It took, you know, it took 30 episodes to kind of get that rapport with these diners. But yeah, that's how it came about. It's so much fun, man. I wouldn't trade it for the world.
Cool. That sounds a lot like what we went through.
Yes. And of course,
you tell.
Oh, it wasn't so much going out to dinner to talk about movies. We all worked together. It was me, John, and Ben, and we would just like at lunch sit around and talk. You know, maybe early in the morning, we would sit around and talk about, oh, you know, we just saw the Man of Steel over the weekend or whatever the latest movie at the time was. And we kept talking about this stuff. And finally, I'm like, you know, we should record this and put it out. And I got a lot of funny looks from both of them at first. And it's funny, too, because when we started, because we all worked together, we would just get a meeting room at the end of the day, set up a little tabletop recorder in there and record. And it's so funny that worked for, we did that for maybe about the first 6 to 8 months. And then Ben, he came in later than us. So he was still technically working while we were recording. And about the third time he got called out while we were recording to take care of something, we decided, all right, let's just do it at night. You know, afterwards we'll do it over Skype. We've been doing like that ever since. But, yeah, very similar, you know, just similar backgrounds and, you know, the difference is we didn't know each other beforehand, but we've all become really good friends through doing this. So
exactly. Yeah. We tried to do it without being in a diner and we just thought it didn't sound right. You know, we were like, we kind of missed the background noise, the ambiance. So we kind of learned how to kind of lower that part of it by kind of greasing the maitre d's a little bit at the beginning.
You see, our ambiance is me taking swigs of my brandy or dropping a plate or, you know.
There you go.
So, or for some of us, trucks rolling by. The black helicopter is coming to take us away.
So there was one time we were in the middle of an episode and an argument broke out between, you know, a bunch of like 20-year-olds and the cashier. And the kid pushed the register off the counter and ran out of the place. So you just heard this big bang in the background. Oh man, what a mess. That was like the final straw. That was like, we can't do this anymore. When a register gets thrown off a counter while we're recording, that's the end of it. So we have to fix this somehow.
Yeah. So where can people find your podcast? Give you the,
People can find us basically anywhere you can find a podcast. You can find us on Apple Podcast, is that what it's called now? I always say iTunes.
Yeah, it's Apple Podcast now.
Yeah, Apple Podcast. We're on Podbean. We're on SoundCloud. We were on SoundCloud to begin with. That was our original web host. And then when we thought they were going out of business, we bought a subscription to Podbean. So now we have two web hosts, basically. So you can either go to Podbean or you can go to SoundCloud. We're on Google Play. We're on Stitcher Radio. And that's where you can find us and listen to us. But you can also go to our website, which is dinnerandapodcast.weebly.com, because we're too cheap to buy a real.com. You can go to Facebook or Twitter or Instagram and just search Dinner and a Podcast. And you can also check out our YouTube channel, which is Dinner and a Podcast. We have a buddy. I'm going to give him a plug. His name's Andrew Brooks, who does amazing animations for us. He used to do like three or four minute clips of the show, and he used to animate them. So like, you know, it was a little animation behind one of our funny stories. Now he's kind of busy. He works for Nickelodeon now. So he does.
Nice.
He does, instead of like 4 minute clips, he'll do like 20 to 30 second like promos for the show. Like this is what you're going to be able to hear on episode 60 or whatever. And we always post them on our Instagram and our Facebook and stuff. So check those out. They're really cool. Andrew Brooks is the man.
Cool.
If you ever want to give him work, he's really, really good and he's super quick.
We might take you up on that. And of course, you can find both of our podcasts on what's the URL? I always forget. Podcastmafia.com. Nerdpodcastmafia.com.
With all the other great podcasts.
Yes.
Yeah.
Got some great shows on there. Really excellent shows on there.
Well, that's been our show for today, and thank you for joining.
No, I think we're here to talk about a TV show, guys.
Right. Fine. Finally. Okay. So I thought The Tick was good.
No.
I'm glad that they showed the last few episodes because, you know, we waited long enough. And
We'll do The Tick soon. We'll do The Tick
soon.
Oh, come on. I promise.
I enjoyed The Tick.
No, of course.
The original one was better, but.
Oh, God. Bite your tongue.
Are you talking about the cartoon or the live action?
Live action with Putty, with the Seinfeld guy. Elaine's boyfriend.
Oh, we are definitely going to have, we're going to discuss this on.
I like terrible things. You're going to learn that as we talk. I like the most awful things.
So your favorite movie is The Room then, right?
No. My favorite movie is Top Gun.
That's not bad. Look, if you want terrible, you got to either go with The Room or Nuki. One of those two.
I really enjoyed Ghost in the Shell. Really enjoyed Ghost in the Shell. I think just because people hated it so much, I liked it just on principle.
Yeah, but you're still not near the bottom of the barrel with that one. I mean, it had Scarlett Johansson on there. You know.
What about Youngblood? Youngblood's one of my favorite movies. You ever see Youngblood?
Yeah. Well,
Rob Lowe, the hockey movie with Rob Lowe.
Oh God.
Yeah, that's right.
To my top 10.
I'm just in the approving how bad my taste in movies is.
I'm telling you, you're gonna have to go see Nuki first. Then you can tell me what terrible is.
What's Nuki?
Look it up. Trust me, or watch The Cinema Snob.
I did enjoy The Room. The Room is entertaining.
Yeah, well, that's the problem with it. It wasn't supposed to be.
Right. Yeah, it's not supposed to be.
But what was supposed to be was Jessica Jones.
Oh, hey, you finally brought it back around.
Hey, look, I can segue. Look at me. We got Jessica Jones season 2 post Next Snap, post Defenders. Not that you'd know it from any of the dialogue in any of the episodes.
Let's do our normal. We'll go around the room. Everyone give a non-spoiler initial reaction before we really get into it. And we'll start with our guest host.
All right. I enjoyed it, but I didn't enjoy it nearly as much as I enjoyed season 1. Season 1 is my favorite Marvel TV or Netflix. I don't know what you would call it, series. Mm-hmm. By far. It just inches out Punisher. Punisher is really, really close. But I have a real connection with the Purple Man. I love that character. It's my favorite. That's my favorite Marvel villain.
He told you to say that, right?
No. I really love that. I have no idea who you guys like, but that he is my favorite Marvel villain, movies or TV. I love that guy. The way he portrayed David Tennant, is that his name?
Yes.
I'm not good with actor names, but he portrayed that character. He brought that character to life so much. But yeah, this season was very different than the first season. Don't go into this season thinking it's going to be anything like season 1 because it's not. And I don't think that made it bad. I just think it made it different. And again, I think the Netflix shows kind of fall into that trap of having too many episodes. I don't think it needed to be 13 episodes. I think it could have been maybe 10. I think it dragged on a little bit. And when we get into the spoiler stuff, I'll tell you what I think could have been taken out and what I think could have been added. But overall, it was good. I mean, it was better than Iron Fist by a country mile. I put it up there with season 2 and 3 of Daredevil. And, you know, I think it inches out Luke Cage a little bit because it was good from beginning to end. With Luke Cage, for me, kind of it stalled in the middle after they killed Cottonmouth. It kind of went south for me, but I think it's up there in the top half of the series. So yeah, check it out.
Okay, how about you, Sir John?
Let's see. No spoilers. This is a minefield. All right. So my favorites were Daredevil, and I would say again, like you, Jessica Jones season 1. And there's no point in comparing it to Iron Rand, because it just, you know, that was the low point in the Marvel Netflix right. series. So, but as far as it went, yeah, it's much different than the first season. And this particular storyline could probably be done with less episodes. If they were going to keep the 13 episodes, they could have done a different premise, but or they could have written it a little bit differently. But so it gets a little slow at times, yeah. But this has probably some of the most character development I've seen. Mm-hmm. And you know, I put it about midway up the list of all the Netflix shows. So yeah, I liked it. I liked it well enough. I'd watch it again. You know, I'd say you could watch through this maybe twice.
Do you think it would have benefited from being released one episode at a time?
No. No, because, well, see, I mean, we'll get into this spoiler. This probably isn't a spoiler. I think the Netflix shows are starting to run themselves into a rut. Mm-hmm. They're having teaser scenes at the end of each episode to make you want to go right to the next one, which I think would only piss people off if they had to watch it one at a time. With binge watching, it forces you to just binge watch it in one day.
Game of Thrones does that, though. Game of Thrones does that.
Yeah, Game of Thrones. But, you know, that's not something that we didn't really have initially. And then, but the bigger problem is the drinking game, who's the real bad guy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in this one, I think I was maybe, you know, sloshed halfway through the fifth episode. And then by the eighth episode, I had lost the game.
Yeah.
So it took a few days before I could see straight to watch the last few episodes. It's just, first off, don't play this game with grain. It's just not a good sight. And bring Pepto if you're going to use something like Goldschlager or St. Brendan's or you know Bailey's, but don't mix them. I'm telling you. They're going to have to speed these up, or they're going to have to liven them up a bit. And I'm not saying that they have to do that, you know, just to do it, but the storylines are starting to stall out, like you said, with Luke Cage. And Luke Cage I loved.
The first six episodes of Luke Cage were the best Marvel things that they put out on Netflix.
Yeah.
And then it went downhill for me.
Yeah,
Cottonmouth was my favorite character. I couldn't wait to see him.
Yeah. No, me neither. I mean, every time he's on the screen, I think he's probably one of the best actors besides Kristen Ritter, personality-wise. He walks on the screen and he takes charge, you know? Kristen Ritter is just proving that she's got a range like you wouldn't believe. Mm-hmm. But still, it's like you said with Luke Cage, it hits a rut. And then you just kind of coast for a little bit, and you're wondering where the plot's going to lead. And then they finally, you know, jump onto what, you know, is going to finally be the end plot.
Right.
So I wish they'd like just stick with, you know, I want to go from episode to episode and feel hectic. You know, I want to go to the next episode saying, oh my God, what's she going to do now? I don't want to go to the next episode going, well, who's she going up against? They just killed off the bad guy again. Well,
that's why I brought up, do you think it could have been released one at a time? Because I don't think this show was built for what you just said. You know, the show isn't built for give me the next one. Like Daredevil season one was like that.
Yeah.
You could not stop watching Daredevil. You had to keep watching it. You couldn't physically get off the couch. But for this, I could have taken one of these a week and digested a little bit and gone to the next one. And maybe, you know, because I have this little notebook that I wrote all these little notes in for Jessica Jones season two. And, you know, I have all these big paragraphs or, you know, notes, but for episode 8, 9, and 10, it's very bare, you know? And I think if I wasn't so tired of watching the first, you know, 7 in a row, maybe I would have been a little more interested in 8, 9, and 10.
Yeah.
And I literally just finished watching it at 8:15.
You know what makes episode 8, 9, and 10 more interesting?
What?
Victory Brewing Storm King. Because it's like 9.5%, and you know, it helps bring those down.
Going along with what Steve just said, like The Punisher, like I watched that straight through, you know. I only stopped watching because I had things to do, but like I couldn't wait to get to the next episode. And The Punisher is a very brutal show, and even with that, it probably would have been better if it was cut down to 10 versus 13, but I still kept wanting to watch it. I had a hard time feeling like I wanted to keep watching Jessica Jones. It didn't get interesting until the big plot twist, which we'll get to in the spoilers. And then there's just, you know, like, John, you're saying there's a lot of character development, but there's character development I didn't care about, you know?
Yeah.
So
I can get that. I can feel that.
So, all right. So that being said, the spoilers are coming up, people. So if you haven't watched it and you don't want any spoilers,
then why are you listening to this show?
Yeah. Really? Yeah. So I would suggest stop now, watch Jessica Jones, come back and listen. Or if you don't care about spoilers, cause a lot of, I find more and more people don't care about spoilers with the Netflix shows. I don't know why. Keep on listening. Real quick, before we get into that, I did do a poll, this afternoon on Twitter. And, my question was, what did you think of Jessica Jones season 2? And, I only gave them 3 options: best Marvel Netflix yet, it was okay, not the best, and it was just plain awful. The, just plain awful got 14%. Best Marvel Netflix got 30%. And then it was okay, not the best, was 57%. So,
you know, you could pick better, like, tiers. Like, you know, it was just okay, or it left me jonesing for more. I mean, you know, you could have gone a lot of ways.
I forgot. Normally I do them Sunday afternoon, so I have a full 24 hours, and I completely forgot about it. So I just did it real quick after lunch today. Okay.
Bye.
So looking at that, it kind of seems like the majority of people are feeling maybe the way we did. Like, no one is saying it was the worst thing ever, but not everyone's loving it either, you know? So yeah, I mean, let's get into this because, I don't know. I kind of felt fatigue after the first couple episodes, you know, like they introduce a new character who's kind of interesting. Like, is he just crazy? Does he really have powers? And you find out he has powers. And of course, I'm talking about the Wizard. And then they kill him off right away. So yeah.
Glad they killed him off though, because his CGI was god awful. It was like something out of Heroes.
Yeah, I'll give you that. I mean, I don't know how they can do it on The Flash every week and make it look half decent.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
And then, they couldn't do it on a Netflix show.
So is the Wizard like Marvel's Vibe? Like, they usually keep him there to kill him off and then to bring him back to life every time they need a plot point?
No, I think he's if I remember correct, he's like an older character that maybe Golden Age. When they were Timely Comics character that they brought back for a little bit in the 60s, but that's it. Like, he's not really, they just needed a character they haven't used yet and that no one cared about. So.
Good job.
I used to call my grandpa the Wizard because he had to pee all the time.
Yeah, that name is, that's a bad name.
So one of the things, and I'm going to ask your guys' opinion on this. One of the things that kind of left a bad taste in my mouth, and this is coming from a straight heterosexual male, is the fact that it's felt like, at least in the first 6 episodes, that sometimes I was watching soft porn.
Dude, there was so much sex in this.
And it just, like, it felt like it was too much, in my opinion. Like,
I have 1, 2, 3, 4 pages of notes for all the episodes, and then I have question notes at the end. Mm-hmm. And the second bullet point is lots of sex.
Right.
So much sex. Lesbian sex, straight sex, all types of sex.
Everybody was sleeping with everybody. It was almost Game of Thrones-like, trying to keep you interested in each of the episodes. But they got it all together in, like, 3 episodes, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and it's just, like, to me, it almost seems like it's a dirty trick to try to keep people interested in. And they, like, yes, they've had sex in the Netflix shows before, but this just felt like they overdid it.
Yeah, it was a dirty, dirty trick.
See, I think, I mean, I'm assuming that they just want you to know that this world is very different from the Daredevil world and the Luke Cage world, even though they're in the same city and it's on the same, you know, continuity and all that stuff, that Jessica Jones lives a much dirtier lifestyle than the rest of them, you know, and lawyers are sleazy and, you know, it's just, I think they're trying to paint a world. And I don't know if they do a great job of that. Like, you know, they do a great job of it with the sex part of it, but mm-hmm. I don't know if they portray it well enough with the characters. But I think that's probably why they did it. But yeah, I think it was a little overkill.
Yeah. But like, okay. If we wanted to concentrate on Jessica Jones, her personality and her problems taking control of her life, mm-hmm. and by showing that focus or by using that scene in the bathroom with her and just the, you know, just the random guy who called her ass nice, you know, if it was just that scene, that would stick in your mind, mm-hmm. and it would solidify her as, you know, she still has these mental problems, these emotional issues and whatever. But if you throw that scene in the middle of all these other sex scenes, then it's just another scene.
Mm-hmm.
You know, doesn't stick out anymore, and it doesn't resonate because it's just another scene with somebody taking their pants down.
Right.
Right. And it's funny because I forgot about that scene until you just mentioned it, and you're right. It feels like it was a scene to set up her emotional state. Like, she'll just, you know, do it with anyone at this point. And
well, she's looking for a connection anywhere, anytime.
Exactly. But by the time you get past that, because of all the other sex, it's just out of your head. So,
well, you've forgotten. Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, like you just said. Like, the only reason I remembered it is because I'm reviewing notes. You know.
Oh, no, that scene I didn't forget that scene. I didn't have to look at the notes for that one. He got turned on by the fact that he called her out. No one calls her out.
Yeah.
You know, because she said, "What you say to me?" And he goes, "I said, you got a nice ass." And she, that people don't do that to Jessica. Right. You know, because they're scared of her. And that's maybe she was just trying to, I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, in real life, guys, that's called harassment.
Right.
just, you know, yeah, the more you know.
Knowing's half the battle.
You knows it. Oh, sorry. Wrong show.
Yes.
Oh, God.
So yeah, I mean, let's talk a little bit about the characters. So, Kristen Ritter returns as Jessica Jones. I think, you know, she established herself as the character in the first season very well. Very strong character in The Defenders. And I think she carries it on in this series. Like, I don't have any issue with Kristen Ritter's portrayal of the character at all in the show. You guys agree, disagree?
I agree. And she was forced to show a different side of Jessica in a couple of episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Where, like, especially episode, what is it, 7, which is the flashback? Yeah, episode 7 is the flashback episode where she's, you know, in her early 20s, still going to college or whatever.
Right.
And she's in love with the bartender. And she has to, she's very vulnerable, Jessica. You've never seen vulnerable Jessica like that before. And it was cool. It was cool to see her before she was jaded or completely jaded, you know, and bitter.
Right. Before she became John.
Right.
Well, you know, her alcohol consumption isn't even half mine. So
how about all the plugs for all of the different whiskeys? Holy cow.
Yes. There was some product placement in this season.
You had Maker's Mark, you had Knob Creek, and you had Tin Cup. Those three whiskeys were prominent throughout the entire season. I don't drink any of those.
But no telomere do. I mean, what's the problem, man?
Yeah. Like, and do you think that they paid to get them in there?
Oh, well, I mean, the bottles were turned towards the cameras.
There's no way that they're going to mention an alcohol if they weren't paid for it.
Right.
You know, especially a series this popular that they know they're going to get millions of hits on. So, but I mean, product placement aside, I mean, let's go over this. So the plot goes from point to point to point. So in the beginning, Jessica is like upset and, well, okay, she's like her normal self. She's down in the dumps, upset, dealing with stuff. And her friends are pressuring her into trying to find out what origins are. Not sure exactly why they decided on that course of action, but they did.
What do you mean? John? Did we lose John?
I don't know.
And I lost myself. So I paused the thought. Because sometimes it takes a while for a thought to make it through my head.
Did you go to the freezer? No, I think
I ran out of Goldschlager.
Like in season one they hinted at, you know, IGH and it being connected to her origin, you know. So this was a continuation of that story.
Right.
Especially Trish trying to track down the truth of Jessica's origin and her missing 16 hours in the emergency room or whatever it was.
It was a couple of days, I think.
Okay, I don't remember the exact
22 days, I think, she was missing.
This was a detective series.
Yeah?
I wouldn't call the first season was a thriller, right? Would you call it a thriller? What's the one? What's the kind of messes with your head?
A psychological thriller.
Psychological thriller. That's what that was. The first season, you know, it was like a Primal Fear type of feel to it. You know what I'm saying? And this was not that. You know, because this was a detective show. This was her being a detective and showing you her detective skills and finding the clues and doing the right thing as a cop or a detective as a PI. So it the whole feel of the show was different. So they needed something for her to investigate, and IGH was, you know, I don't think that's a bad choice for something to investigate. If it's going to take a while for her to find the answers,
mm-hmm.
you
know,
so.
No, I agree. And it also then delved into more into Trish's obsession of Jessica's origin and, you know, her feeling vulnerable about not having Jessica's powers and then wanting Jessica's powers, right? Like, that was an interesting journey that they took us on with her, I think, this season.
But it was messy. Yeah. I mean, it was all balled up with her addictions and her complete inability to self-introspect. She couldn't see that she was, like, hurting people around her. And she was incredibly selfish and just, I mean, I did not like her character at all this time around. At least in the first one, she was trying to help. But in this one, she was the impetus or the catalyst for just about almost everything bad that happened.
Was she the villain or was the mom the villain?
Well, the mom
was a good question.
Damn it. Now you made me think. That means another drink.
When you're sober?
Well, it's my fault. Not being prepared.
That's actually a really good question. So, yeah, okay. So you just revealed the big plot twist there that her mother, was alive. They went under the same procedures as Jessica, but they didn't know each other for a long time. But that's a good question because, yes, the mother does a lot of bad things, but, you know, in the end, she tries to redeem herself.
Right. And her motives weren't as bad. You know, Trish's motives the whole time were for herself.
Right. Yes.
you know?
So who cares? Yeah. No, no, go on with that, because that's exactly my feeling. It just, she pissed me off.
Trish, you know, they got into Trish's, you know, with the I Want Your Cray Cray. I love that title, by the way. That was the best title in any episode ever made. I Want Your Cray Cray. And that music video was amazing. But I mean, it just showed her addictive nature. It showed how she was inferior mentally, and she wasn't as strong and she wasn't as confident as Jessica. And it just showed her jealousy, and it just came out once she started using the little inhaler thing. And then every decision she made was for Trish. Even when you thought she was off the drugs and she was back to normal, she wasn't. She was still very much addicted to the drug and wanted the drug, and all the moves she made. Didn't matter who was in her way. Didn't matter if Malcolm was in her way. Didn't matter if Jessica was in her way. She was gonna get what she wanted. And she wanted the powers. And even she was like on her deathbed, and she's like, you don't deserve these powers. I do. I could be helping people, blah, blah, blah. So I think she's more of a villain than the mom, even though the mom killed people. Like you said, the mom tried to redeem herself. The mom has psychological issues from the accident, from the treatments that she got over the years.
She's a non-green Hulk, basically.
Yeah. And Trish has no excuse other than just being a jealous bitch.
Now, which mom were you talking? I mean, I know which mom you're talking about, but which mom are you talking about? Because Trish's mom was a horrible, horrible person.
Well, she's a mirror of Trish in a way.
Right.
You know?
I mean,
Trish wanted was to get on cable. She wanted the drugs so she can do a good 3-minute, you know, interview on CSN or whatever the name of their station was.
Right. You know? That's so true. Like, all of the and maybe that was part of the what they were trying to show in the whole show is the duality of mother and daughter on both sides, you know.
Yeah.
Like the Trish's mother just wanted her daughter to be famous so she could ride her daughter's coattails, and you know, apple doesn't fall far from the tree kind of message, where now on the other side you've got Jessica and her mother, and you know, because of the procedures, her mother has anger issues.
That's an understatement.
Well, they said she always had a temper, so I think the treatments kind of enhanced that.
Right. But yeah, but she sees her daughter doing good, and she wants to be with her daughter and emulate that, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's a yin and yang kind of thing between the mothers and daughters. So it's a. But yeah, whew, she was.
And when did Trish make the jump from I want to be a big star and that's why I want the drugs to I want to be a hero and that's why I want the drugs? I don't remember that transition happening, but it happened really quickly. You know, I thought that was strange.
Yeah, yeah. I agree. It, you can almost argue it was a lie she was telling herself, just because she wanted the powers, and she didn't care why she really wanted them. She just wanted them.
It was just a justification?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, you could say it came from a lot of things, like the, you know, from the first season of Jessica Jones and what happened with the Defenders and all the other supers showing up and Trish sitting on the sidelines watching all this stuff happen while she's sitting on her show doing lifestyle pieces. Mm-hmm. That, you know, she finally, but they didn't show, but like you said, they didn't show that transition. They just implied it. And she was, as soon as, you know, first episode started up, she's already on her, you know, her march towards trying to be somebody who saved people. Right. But again, like you said before, it was completely selfish. She didn't want to save people to save people. It was like she wanted to save people to feel good.
Right.
It was a replacement for her addiction.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of addictions, everybody, I mean, geez, I mean, how many addictions can they fit in a one freaking series? Was it Malcolm? I mean,
I don't see anything wrong with the addiction he had in this season. I mean, we've all been there. Come on.
Well, the sex addiction?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, whatever. That's just 2018.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I know we all have, like, Y chromosomes, and we're, like, you know, we lose our man card if we don't, like, say, yeah, but that is self-destructive. I mean, it's the least – it was the least bad addiction, I think, you know, because it's all consenting adults. But at the same time – and here's what I don't get. Okay, his character arc is he's, you know, sex addicted now, so he's going on – you know, he's basically going on what must be the perfect version of Tinder because, you know, I've never heard of anybody getting that lucky.
He's a good looking dude.
And, so the thing, yeah, you don't look like Malcolm, true. So.
he's built, he's good looking.
Right here, Tim. So, but, you know, he goes from that to somehow they're saying that his addiction is working for Jones and he's not, he's. That's, you know, that he's trying to make himself better by working with her. I didn't get that because
I didn't see it as an addiction until Jessica pointed it out in episode 11 or whatever it was.
Yeah, but it wasn't really as an addiction.
I think here's my interpretation of Malcolm's character in season 2 is,
hey baby,
he was an incomplete person. Like, he had gotten better from his drug addictions and he was putting his life together, but he was dependent on Jessica, like, in the sense of, oh, he kept telling himself, I need this job, I need to keep busy so that I won't fall back into my old habits. It's also why it was taking him forever to finish fixing the wall. So by the time we get to the end of the season, he realizes he doesn't need Jessica. He can be a complete person on his own. That's why he finishes everything on an apartment and he leaves. And he goes out and gets his own job.
With the bad guys. So, yeah, just, you know, that was a brilliant move. But here again, we have another instance, like the scene in the bathroom stall, where if we were concentrating on maybe Jessica's addictions and Trish's addictions, you know, it would have made a really good series, and it would have been interesting to see that. But they're showing everybody having addictions, and so not one is really standing out anymore.
Yeah. They're all flawed individuals, you know?
But they could be flawed in different ways.
They are flawed in different ways.
But they're all – it's all about addiction. I mean, it's like they came up with a treaty for the for this script, and they said, this one's going to be about addiction.
So let's. You know,
that's what vices are, though. All vices are addictions to something.
We can talk about.
Jerry was addicted to money.
Yeah.
I mean, you can make that argument for kind of all of the.
Now, Jerry was addicted to power.
Okay. Yeah. And money comes
power over other people.
And, you know, the Trish's mom is addicted to fame.
Yeah, if it's through her daughter.
How about how about Pierce Chang, the other PI?
He's addicted to being a dick.
He's just a sexist. He doesn't like being beat up by a girl.
Yeah, I mean, that was the thing I found most annoying, I think, in the season, was that character, because he wouldn't give up. Even when he was in the wrong, he still wouldn't give up. And it was like, really? Like,
nobody builds a successful business that big and is that, was it, that flammable? No, that,
chauvinistic?
No, not chauvinistic. He was like, it's like you said, he couldn't, he didn't like losing, and he immediately went right off the cliff.
Right.
You know? And, you know, with the sniping and trying to kill him, it's like nobody builds a business like that and is that close to the precipice.
Yeah, he could have been removed from the show, I think, without a hiccup.
Yeah, you're right, because he literally contributed nothing that I can think of.
No, because you didn't. I'm trying to think, like, did they need him to link Jerry to Jessica? But she didn't. He was already, that was already her client.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't see the need for him there.
Yeah,
you're right. The only thing he really serves as is a job for Malcolm at the end of the series, but it could have been any other private investigating firm. It didn't have to be him, you know.
He opened up his own PI firm.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that would have probably cut at least an episode out. Got rid of all his stuff.
And they could have even kept the guy who went into his associate, the guy who went into Jessica's place and took all of her notes and everything. They could have even kept him in and just been somebody that Jerry hired or what's his name hired. It didn't have to be main character to waste time with.
Right.
If the actor wants to come on the show, I'd be glad to talk to him. he could feel free to come on our show, Terry Chen, and argue with us about why your character was needed and crucial. But until then, it wasn't.
So, the other storyline that I didn't really care about, and maybe you guys feel differently, was Jerry Hogarth's storyline this season, because it was just like, they made her to be such, I won't use the B word, but like a person who will manipulate and do what they want to get what they want. Like, they want to have power over people. They want to be in control. And then it felt like, oh, now you're making her sick and we're supposed to feel sympathetic for her. Like it just didn't work for me.
Well, that's the thing. I don't think you ever had to feel sympathetic for her, because that was just a vehicle for her to show how ruthless she can be. I mean, she's going to beat ALS. She's going to be the one person that can beat it. Because you knew when she got the. It's a show based on comic books, so we know that nobody really dies, and you people who get cancer stage 4 can beat it somehow. Mm-hmm. But still, it was going to be interesting when she got the diagnosis. You knew right then that she was going to walk down a path and there were going to be bodies behind her, that right. She was going to find a way to cure it. And then we watched her, destroy a couple of lives.
I guess. I mean, I'm not a huge fan of the character to begin with, so maybe that's what my problem was, that they were spending so much time with her this season. It was like,
Well, again, it comes back to everybody's so damaged, nobody stands out,
Right. And
we've already seen her damaged in like a couple of the other series, not just Jessica Jones' initial. She's always been a very mean, very conniving, very dangerous character. And so sticking her in this show only makes her middling, because of the rest of the characters going through basically the same story arc.
True.
I found her more palatable in this one than I did in the other shows, because she wasn't just the same stone-faced mean lady all the time. There was some difference in her in this series because of the illness.
Right.
And because of the illness, she realized that, like she says at the end, you got to surround yourself with the right people. I think she found out who the right people were. It wasn't just, powerful, rich lawyers. It might be, somebody like Malcolm or Jessica, that's supposed to, show them the way or show them the lesson that they need to learn. So I liked her better in this series than I did in any, because when I first saw her, I was like, oh man, we're going to get a lot of this lady again. but to see her struggle, that's the kind of like character you want to see get knocked down a peg.
True.
It's like watching Littlefinger get his throat slit in Game of Thrones. You're like, yes, totally deserved it. Because it's such a a-hole, the whole time. And then that's how I felt she was. She was the a-hole and she was just one emotion the whole time. And to see her have to handle something that you wouldn't expect her to have to deal with was pretty interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. I would have gone that far. She wasn't Littlefinger-esque.
No one.
But she didn't. She did open herself up to being mistreated because she didn't treat other people well. And at one point or another, that was going to bite her on the ass, and it turned out that way.
Yeah, I was going to say I was a little shocked when they introduced the healer. I fell for it. I did think like she got healed because there are healers in the Marvel universe. So I was like, oh, okay, like, this is a possible thing in a more from a Marvel comic. And then as soon as the scientist was like, there was no one of that name, you know, whoever got treated, it was like, ah, all right.
Oh, I especially like the part where he's healing her and he's putting her, his hands all over and she's, and she, I think she started for a second. He says, no, it helps me connect with you. It's like, oh, good. He's filling her up too. This is not going to end well. It's not going to end well at all.
No, no.
How did Inez talk to him and come up with this plan though? That's the only one thing I'm thinking about. Awesome. How did Inez and that the healer guy plan this big, escape / heist?
The same way Batman got from the island back to Gotham.
it is a slight plot hole because it made it feel like when she put it together, when she told him about the healer, when she told Jerry about the healer, the nurse told Jerry about the healer, and then you find, after you find everything out, your mind automatically goes to, oh, well, that was her long game. Like, this was her plan all along. But then again, wait, no, she stole a TV from Malcolm in the beginning, and then she was going to just grab some stuff and leave. So, yeah, like, was it a long game, or was it, like, you know, an opportunity presented itself? And, yeah, how did she...
When did she speak to him? It's not, you can't just call a guy up in jail. And she was in that apartment the whole time.
Unless it's a scam they've ran before.
Yeah. Well, get broken out of jail?
Oh, no, you're true. You're right.
You know, that was just weird to me, like how they hatched that whole scheme when she was legally on house arrest.
Yeah, it seems to suggest that they were a little bit better at the game than you're led to believe initially, that they, you know, to come up with that kind of plan right off the bat. But then if they were that smart, then they wouldn't have fallen for the turn them against each other gambit that that Jerry Hogarth pulled on them at the last scene.
Exactly. So if you take out the stuff with the Asian PI guy, and you take out the stuff with a lot of the stuff with the healer, you got yourself two episodes less.
Yeah,
this is true.
So maybe an episode and a half.
Yeah. Now the other plot points we've still got. We're getting along here. What was it? We had the doctor. Dr. Evil, whatever his name was, that
Carl.
Yeah, played by Callum Keith Rennie. The good old. I'm glad to see a bad guy who's like, I'm trying to do good. I'm helping people while leaving a trail of monsters and bodies behind him. That's the way true monsters are. They in their head, they're the star of the show. They're the hero, not the, you know, and because of their the way they look at themselves, that they're what do they call that when you delude, self-delusion. They're, because of their self-delusion, they don't see the damage they're actually doing. And this guy is like a perfect example of that.
No, definitely. And it did leave me with two questions. You know, like, how did he get away with it for so long with no one knowing what he was doing? And are there other powered people out there? You know?
Well, there's cloak and dagger.
How many people did he kill? How many people did he have to kill to get the three or two?
You know, exactly.
True. Yeah. Well, yeah. Three definitely if you count Hellcat.
Yeah. Oh, well, the wizard.
Yeah, the wizard. Hellcat.
Simpson. Right. Yeah. Simpson was his. And the two ladies, Jessica and then Alicia. Was her name Alicia? The mom.
Yes.
Yeah. So we've got quite a few then.
That we know of.
Yeah, that we know of, which opens up the door for other Netflix series is to just pull the old, you know, the old kryptonite trick.
The old exploding Hadron Collider.
Yes. The dark matter wave.
Dark matter wave.
Pick your poison. It can't just be that this is a world where there are mutants and humans and monsters. It has to be, well, this guy left a whole bunch of bad guys behind him, and now we're cleaning them up.
Yes.
All right. So what did you think of the police in this series? How stupid can a police force be when they're handling somebody like the mother?
Is there a right way to handle her? I mean...
Yeah. They could have put her in whatever that super prison was that they kept mentioning.
The raft.
The raft. Yeah, they could have put her right there. I mean, how did they not know that she was that strong?
They wanted the doctor. They knew. They wanted to make a deal.
Yeah, but then they put her in like regular prison.
That's how mafia people get out.
What, they bend the bars? I didn't know mafia people were
bars. No, they make deals. They make deals. And they get less sentences and, you know, things like that. It's how criminals get back on the street, man.
Yeah, but then it makes you wonder, since we're dealing with the MCU and they mentioned the raft, how does it fall under the Sokovia Accords?
Mm.
You know, and then how come the government didn't step in and grab her and take her to the raft right away to see if they could use her? You know, like, I get it. There's the whole deal. I mean, and it was the further the plot of the show along and tell the story they wanted to tell. But yeah, like, someone that dangerous, they probably would have taken right away to a high security place like the raft.
I think she would have gotten shot a lot sooner.
Well, that's true, too.
You know, I mean, the police probably would have shot her right away, especially when they're in the hospital towards the end and the mom takes Detective Sunday. And then jumps out the window with her. Like, Jessica's like, don't go near her. And she went near her. I mean, it was very stupid. And then the guy should have taken the shot. You know, Detective Costa should have taken the shot right there. He should have ended it.
No, I totally agree with that. Like, and that's how it would have gone in real life. We all know this. Like, that's how cops are. So.
Especially when someone
kills another cop. Like.
But they don't go all gung ho. They get pissed and they catch the guy, but they don't, like.
Keep going.
Okay, look, I'm trying to say good things, but I've heard stories because I had an uncle that was on the NYPD, so.
I know a lot of cops. Yeah, no, they don't take it easily when a cop gets killed. So, okay.
Well, yeah, but they were stupid. They were the architects of their own destruction.
Very much so.
Yeah.
And would cops really work with a private eye who's got a history of, you know, recklessness?
Well, if she saved all their lives, there would be some leniency there.
Not, I don't know to the extent, though, they gave her. That was
a lot of leeway.
Yeah. And she did a lot of questionable things in this.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true.
I mean, even to the point where, like, why wasn't she in jail at the end?
Yeah. Yeah, when she's in the liquor store, I'm like, shouldn't she be in jail or on probation? Wasn't she on probation to begin with?
It wasn't in her contract.
Or parole, whatever it was.
If it's not in the script, it doesn't happen. I get that, but yeah.
No. Jessica Jones season 3, Orange is the New Black.
Oh.
No, that's Jerry. That's only if Jerry goes to jail.
Oh, God.
Oh, that was bad.
You said stuff about cops.
I'm not saying anything that isn't common knowledge, and I'm not...
You are so getting pulled over. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
I'm just, and then when they pull me over and say, my name's John. John O'Grady.
But then they won't find any alcohol in the car and they'll know you're lying.
That's why I carry a flask with me just for such occasions.
All right. Moving on, because we don't have a lot more time. We haven't talked about the Kilgrave in the room.
Yeah.
Not enough Kilgrave.
Obviously, Steve, you love Kilgrave and you love the character, but to me, what bothered me about his return is that it was an interesting writing thing, you know, a cool little thing to write into the show, but then they only do it one episode. Like,
either
be consistent with it or don't use it. Like, don't just put it in one episode and be like, at the end, she's just like, okay, go away, and then it's done.
Right. Because it was clearly a post-traumatic stress syndrome, PTSD kind of thing. And it didn't last very long. And PTSD does not go away like that for people. Yeah. The Punisher, you know?
Oh, yeah. But also, between Jessica Jones season one and season two, we've had the Defenders. And you can't say she's all fine and dandy in the Defenders, just, you know, acting like her pissy self, but, you know, no PTSD, no visions, and then suddenly have it in this.
Oh, no, man. This is way more emotionally trying on her, I think. I mean, yeah, she's saving the city from some mystical thing, but this is her mom that she hasn't seen in 17 years that she thought was dead, is now a murderer. She's trying to play both sides of the coin. I could see this playing being a lot more stressful on her.
And you're forgetting what triggered it. Like, there's a whole subplot of, is Jessica a killer or not? Because she has killed before, and then twice, and then all of a sudden she's at this, I was going to say security guard, but the prison guard's home to get dirt on him to help her mother out who's in prison. And because he's another male chauvinistic jerk, he attacks her and she kills him, you know?
Okay, that's fair enough. Yeah.
So that's what triggers her seeing Kilgrave. But then, you know, like, then after one episode, she's just like, you go away, and then that's it. And it's like, it doesn't quite work that way, I don't think.
I think
it is if you're a Scientologist.
I think they could have introduced him earlier and kept him going a little longer and did a little bit less with the mom towards the end. Because I think towards the end, the relationship between Jessica and the mom was pretty well established, and it wouldn't have been a big leap to say that Jessica is going to try to help her mom. Mm-hmm. I think they could have done a little bit less road trip with the mom and given you a little bit more her struggling with Kilgrave.
Right.
That's just my opinion.
No, I agree. You know, and I mean, when I first saw it, I know you haven't, John. Have you ever played Arkham Knight?
Bits and pieces, yeah.
Right. So that's a gimmick they use in Arkham Knight, where Batman keeps seeing the Joker after he died, you know, after he's dead, in his head. And it's like okay, at first I'm like, are they copying that? But like, no, I liked how they were doing it. And then I'm like, is he going to be through the rest of the series? And it was like, at the end of this episode, she just tells him to go away. And I'm like, it's that one thing where it's like, and I think that was one of my issues with this season, is some of the writing is a little uneven. Like, it's not consistent.
You know what would have been cool? If she actually did something wrong because of him. Because she never does.
Right.
You know, she never listens to him. She kind of just fights him the whole time and still stays on course and doesn't listen to him. I think it would have been a little bit more impactful if she actually gave in to him once and then kind of had to deal with that to get rid of him.
Well, there's the extra episodes that they should have been focused on.
Right. Yeah. Like, maybe if he showed up a little bit before when she broke into the house, the guard's house.
Right.
And she killed the guard because he told her to. And then she had to deal with that. Because that was just self-defense. She didn't murder the guy. She killed him. I don't think she murdered him.
Right. But it just raised more of the question, which, no, you're right. It would have worked too, because now she's breaking into this guy's house to get dirt on him, just to help her mother out. So that should have had her questioning who she was, and that could have triggered Kilgrave at that point. Mm. Yeah, we should have wrote this season.
All right, so moving on from there, I don't know if I've missed any other of the larger plot points except for the crazy doctor guy who Carl, who keeps on you know, trying to say, I'm doing good, I'm doing good. Here, let me ruin this person's life. Hold on a second. Trish, you want to be a superhero? Sure. Here, let me experiment on you. No problem. Well, I'm doing good for the. It's good for humanity.
I thought he was playing her. I thought he was just saying, yeah, I'm going to give you superpowers. And then when the time came, I thought he was just going to knock her out and go with Jessica.
And yet he didn't. Right. He gave her superpowers. I thought it was speaking of the writing, I thought it was a really, really quick turn from I'm helping humanity and these experiments are for the good of all to, you know what, I suck. I'm just going to blow myself up.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was odd. And the fact, too, like he just started the experiment or the transfusions on Trish and then, you know, Jessica stopped it and ripped it out, knowing that it could hurt her. And instead of him saying, all right, I'll come with you and I'll help her, he decides, no, I'm going to blow myself up and destroy all my research.
Yeah. Now let that be a lesson to you. If you live in the Marvel Universe and you come up with a way to create mutants or super soldiers or anything, the minute you figure out how to do it, make sure you've got your last will and testament in order. make sure that your next of kins are notified because you ain't going to last long.
But they have his notebook still.
That is true.
Yeah.
Jessica has the notebook. So do you think that's going to play a part in a future season somewhere? Someone gets a hold of that?
If it results in Squirrel Girl, I hope so.
Oh, that's cool. They're doing Squirrel Girl, right? Yeah, the AT&T chick is playing Squirrel Girl.
Yes. That's they're gonna. I think they're doing like a West Coast Avengers show.
Okay.
And I think, I mean, Great Lakes Avengers type show. And I think it's gonna be on ABC Family.
No, I want a gritty Squirrel Girl, and I want it on Netflix. Damn it!
All right. Well, you complain to Marvel and Disney.
So. All right. Well, have we missed anything before we get to the headshot? Headshot.
Nah, because we could talk about all these little details till we're blue in the face. But I think we hit a lot of most of the major plot points.
I have one. Just one really quick thing.
Sure.
How bad could the Spanish mom, have been if they gave full custody of the kid to the ex-con dad? When does an ex-con dad ever win full custody of his child? What did that lady have to lose custody of that kid?
It happens when they want Jessica to play mommy in a built-in family.
Okay.
They saw how good it was working with Maze and the little girl on Lucifer. I mean, a kid. can be a good catalyst for redemption.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have a few friends that are divorced with kids, and yeah, the guy almost even guys that have decent jobs don't get custody. So yeah, that was a little questionable.
This truly is a universe based on a comic book.
Okay, that's how it works. Yeah, well, she did try to kidnap her.
Yeah.
Him, I mean. Yeah. But
he didn't go to jail. He was in jail for falsifying documents and stuff. Like,
and he was still falsifying documents.
Yeah. He was still a criminal.
Well, that I've seen articles that imply that that's just another way Jessica was using people but I don't know. I didn't quite get that plot point. And maybe that was just too subtle. The writers were trying to put too much in.
Perhaps.
Okay. Oh, good. Great. I just got Ben. Ben will love that. wow, it's been a while. Okay. Right. So towards the end, then let's talk about denouement.
So Jessica and her mother are on the run, possibly fleeing to Canada. They end up in an amusement park, which looks like it might be the same set from The Punisher.
Yeah.
Especially when they pass by the Ferris wheel. I mean, yeah. And then I mean, the merry-go-round, and then they end up on the Ferris wheel, and it's like they basically just have a conversation about, you know, wanting to do the right thing, and she's going to give herself up so Jessica doesn't, she's not a burden to Jessica.
And yeah, the mother finally realizes, hey, this is my daughter. Maybe I should do right by her.
Uh-huh. And then someone, someone shoots the mom in the head. And who does it end up being?
It should have been Costa, that poor guy. He went through so much shit.
Yes, and that would have been, you know, a better, a more acceptable ending, because it wouldn't be her sister killing her adopted sister, killing her mother.
Right. And doing it while saying, I had to, you know it, right? You didn't understand. It's like, again, completely self-centered, completely selfish. That, you know, she didn't do it because it was the right thing. She did it because she had to be the hero.
Right.
Right. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
That is the nail on the head right there. Hitting the nail on the head. Yeah.
No, that's the thing. I don't see Trish as a hero at this point. And she has gone so far off the rails that I could see her being a villain in the next series, because she never gave a thought to what Jessica, you know, thought to anything that Jessica was telling her about what was going on with her mother. She never even asked. She just went ahead and shot her and you know, and hey, look, I did this great thing. You know, and now she's got superpowers. It's like there is nothing to stop her from continuing on this road she just put herself on to become a bad guy.
Right.
She gets everything she wants her entire life.
Yeah.
She's a spoiled brat. Her entire life. She got her superpowers like she wanted, right? And what are those powers anyway? I mean, Hellcat like has some type of like aura thing, doesn't she?
Does she, or is it? And is it? I'm thinking of Black Cat, because she has a bad luck aura.
No, yeah, that's. Let's see. The original Hellcat was Patricia Hellstrom. But now she's Patsy Walker. But I think it's what is it? The powers were demon sight.
Yeah, it was some weird mystical type of thing there.
Summon a costume that mimics her original Hellcat costume. Blah blah blah. Affects her psychic augmenter. What the hell?
According to Wikipedia, all over the place. the Patricia Walker version is well trained martial arts and gymnast. Psychic senses, force field generation, well-mounted retractable wrist-mounted retractable claws, and grappling hooks. But it almost seemed like she had cat-like reflexes.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Because it's gonna strain the budget if they have to start doing, you know, force fields and psychic generation. And I mean, not that I wouldn't like to see it. Not with her character.
And she'll have the proportional strength of a cat.
Can you lift my cup in my mouth? I can't quite seem to do it.
Problem is, she naps 20 hours a day.
Yeah.
She just rubs herself against your leg. Strange.
And if she's going after the bad guys, all I have to do is throw a small mouse or something.
Yeah, on a string.
Catnip is her kryptonite. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm making fun of her, but it's just I'm sorry that just the character arc for her is all downward from here. If they go on to the third season and there's no redemption or no arc where she hits bottom because the decisions she's making are all about herself and not about anybody else, then, you know, I think they'll have lost not only an opportunity, but a portion of the goodwill that they've drummed up at this point.
Is she a good guy or a bad guy, Hellcat?
She's supposed to be a good guy.
Yeah, a good guy.
So she's going to have to make amends with Jessica at some point.
Yeah, but first she has to get out of her shell and stop thinking about herself.
Right. Well, maybe the next season she goes around vigilantian, you know, around Manhattan, and she runs into Jessica somehow and reconnects. Who knows?
Well, it'd be more interesting if Jessica beats the crap out of her because she thinks that she's a villain.
Yeah.
Not that she wouldn't deserve it, but I'll also be pissed if we get a Hellcat episode or a Hellcat series before we see anything about Black Widow.
Mm.
Right.
I think we get a Black Widow movie before we get a Hellcat series.
I hope so. But anyway, so yeah, I mean that's basically it.
And
Headshot fade to black.
A question, because I can't remember off the top of my head if she was in Punisher or not. Is this the first Netflix series without Claire Temple in it at all?
No, she wasn't in another one.
So it was the Punisher that she wasn't in.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. Yeah, she definitely was not in the Punisher.
Is that a contractual thing or a storyline thing?
I don't know. I haven't heard anything about what the actress is up to, so interesting.
There were lots of good places for her to go in Punisher where I thought she would pop up, because that guy was always hurt.
Because he needed, well, I mean, yeah, exactly. He's like the one time they really need a nurse.
Right. Right.
So, interesting. Yeah. We'll see where she pops up next. All right. So, yeah. So, we end the series basically with Trish and Jessica hating each other. Trish killed Jessica's biological mother. Malcolm is off working for a rival PI, and Jerry started her own law firm.
I hate the fact that Malcolm's not with Jessica. I think Jessica was too hard on him.
She might have been a little bit hard on him, but he also turned on her.
Oh, yeah.
Not exactly turned on her, but he didn't, like, think to ask her. He just went along with everything that, what's her name said. And everything Trish said and didn't really question anything, you know?
Yeah, well,
true. And then Trish was using him to basically get information to find where the doctor was, so.
And for the sexy time.
No, the sexy time was all planned so he would do all the work. Because she's not smart enough to do the work. She's not smart enough to do the detective work. He was, and she knew that.
Right.
Yeah. Interesting.
And he had the resources. You know, he had the resources he had Jessica's laptop available to him. Things like that.
Right. All right. So we'll go around now. We'll give our rating and our final thoughts. How we do it on this show is we do 1 out of 10 capes, Steve. So we'll let you go first.
I give it a 7 caper, 6.5, 7 caper. Good series. It was a strong story. It kept me interested. I mean, there might have been some lulls, you know, towards like the back end, you know, the back nine. But overall, I thought this was a strong, a good showing by a Marvel Netflix series, as usual.
Cool. Johnny boy.
Well, it wasn't the best, and the writing could use some tightening up. We had Kristen Ritter, who is anchoring this. I mean, her range of emotion is pretty big, and it's believable, I still like seeing her kicking ass. So if they had done as we talked about and got rid of a couple of episodes, this would have been much higher. So right now, I think I'm going to give it 7.5 McNally lagers.
All right. Along those lines, I think Marvel and Netflix need to look at their 13 episode formula and decide, are they just doing 13 because that's what they started with? Or should they really just do as many episodes as fits the story that they're trying to tell.
Hear, hear.
Because it's starting to wear a little, guys. Sorry for those at Marvel who might be listening to this. But we still love it. So that being said, I'm going to agree with Steve's rating. I'm going to say it's somewhere with maybe 6.75 capes. And definitely people should check it out. I don't know if you're going to want to watch it a second time. Like, I can always go back and watch any of the Daredevil seasons. I liked both of them very much. So, we'll see. So,
and I think we're hard on these shows because Marvel puts out such a good product.
Yes.
Yes.
Like, if this was the first season of Jessica Jones, and, well, Jessica Jones was like, what, the second show out, right? After Daredevil? I think. And, you know, this, we might have thought a lot higher, better of this show without getting all the great stuff before it.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Because before that, what we have to compare to means, again, we go back to Captain America stealing a car and just, yeah, he's like, I'll never get over that. But, yeah, I mean, we didn't really have anything good at that point. It's just so that, yeah, this is, it's totally their fault. It's their fault for their success.
Cool. So, awesome. Anything you want to add, Steve, before we sign off this week?
About Jessica Jones or?
No, about your show. Anything you want to plug?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Check us out. We're called Dinner and a Podcast. We're three really, really good friends from, for about 10, 15 years now that love to just shoot the shit and have a good time. We started off as like a sci-fi nerdy kind of podcast and we kind of morphed into like a comedy podcast, I think, at this point. We just love getting together and talking about goings on. And you can find us on iTunes and SoundCloud. If you like the other shows and their podcast mafia, and you kind of, we're probably the least nerdiest in the nerd podcast mafia. You guys can all, talk circles around us as far as comics and things like that go. But if you need a good laugh and you want to just hear three guys with really good chemistry talk about funny stuff, Give us a shot. I think you'll like us. You can find us on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Google Play, and Podbean.
Yes. They're, it's better than being murdered by a baker or a bag of dicks.
Not much is better than a bag of dicks, but I think we are.
I thought we were going to keep politics out of this.
Our only sponsor is a company called Bag and
See, John, I'm proving that I listen to his show.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I just wanted to take a pot shot at the politicians. So.
Well,
we
on
never
that
politics on Dinner and a Podcast. No, never.
On that note, boys and girls, as always, thanks for listening, and don't let your cape get caught in the door. Have a good week.